Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Not so long ago, there were only two kinds of Americans, children and adults. And then in the 1930s, a new phrase and a new species entered the national scene, the teenager. And by 1945, the teenager was a national institution or a national monstrosity, however you want to put it. As the Dictionary of American Slang points out, modern America is the only country in the world having a phrase for members of this group, and the only country considering it as a separate entity whose influence, tastes, and ideas are worthy of discussion. Well, increasingly thoughtful Americans are beginning to wonder just what this national phenomenon is, and today the Open Mind proposes to inquire into the state of the teenager in 1963, what's good about him, what's monstrous, and bad or good, where is he headed? Our panel, here to my left, Mr. Paul Anka, singer, songwriter, and undoubtedly a teenage idol. The one song of Mr. Anka, Diana, has sold more than 8 million copies. Mrs. Enid Halp, editor of 17, who was to be with us, has withdrawn from the program. Here to my right, a lady who knows a great deal about teenagers, Mrs. Grace Heckinger, wife of the education editor of the New York Times. Mr. and Mrs. Heckinger wrote the recent book, Teenage Tyranny, which is being so widely read and so widely discussed today. And next to Mrs. Heckinger, Mr. Al Capp, the man whom John Steinbeck has called the finest satirist since Lawrence Stern, and of course creator of that revolutionist, the Shmoo, and the no less redoubtable Little Abner. Mrs. Heckinger, would you get us going with a comment on that interesting title of your book, Tyranny? That's a strong word. What do you really mean there?
Well, before I even say that, I want to state right at the outset that we are not against teenagers. What we mean by teenage tyranny is really two things. It's the tyranny of the teenage culture, as you say, separating teenagers, a group of their own, over the individual teenagers themselves, and the tyranny of teenage tastes, tastes in music, tastes in movies, tastes in buying clothing and soft drinks and the like, how this tyrannizes over adults and forces them in many ways to go along with the teenage culture. As a matter of fact, we began thinking about this book and we were driving through the country, and unless we were near a big city and we wanted to hear music other than rock and roll, we were almost unable to get it on the radio. In other times, we were at dinner parties and had to wait until 10 or 11 o'clock at night to eat because somebody was either picking the kids up or getting them from somewhere and bringing them back, and the grown-ups just had to wait until all this was out of the way. And so we felt that even though we didn't have teenagers, that our lives were being influenced by their tastes and
being
habits.
Being tyrannized. Mr. Anka, the lady mentioned teenage music.
Well, what were you listening to 20 years ago, considering you're about 26?
Thank you. Well, I was listening to all different kinds of music. It's true that a few years ago, shall we say in my time, Frank Sinatra was considered an idol, and many people said that he was just a phenomenon, a passing thing, but he was only one of many different types of things. I mean, teenagers were also listening then to folk music, as I understand they are a little now. But the main thing was that if adults didn't want to listen to Frank Sinatra at that time, there were plenty of other things on the radio for them, and today this is just not as true.
I think you'll find that at that time, I think Frank Sinatra was playing the Paramount Theater, which is not used as it was then. It was they were screaming then, and they were saying he wouldn't last, which we won't go into. I think him and everyone else was compared that way. I think it's a cycle, which is again. I'm neutral on this program. I have now arrived and found out what the conversation is going to be about, and I'm very neutral. But I will try and.
Well, you see, the point that we made in the book was that Frank Sinatra had talent. Perhaps he got famous doing these things for teenagers, but he could sing, and later it was found that he could act. And he wasn't one of 10 or 15 who were a great deal like him. He was unique in his talent.
I think you have a lot of unique talent today, and I think that the only reason it's being stressed upon that teenagers is because for the first time, the word teenager has achieved some kind of a stature today, and they're more aware of the teenagers, but I'm against people who say that there's nothing else to listen to. You never hear the kids complaining about anything that the adults listen to. There are plenty of FM radio stations to listen to. I myself listen to WNEW, which plays very good music and of the best of all jazz and everything.
But on the major network radio, which people listen to in the car, for example, which isn't true. I don't want to really believe them. There is other music. I don't want to belabor this.
Your major stations. You want to talk about majors? Are NBC, CBS, and ABC, and they do not play it. They play the best of it and the best of jazz. Our little independent stations.
Yes, well, you're talking about New York, which is comparatively a civilized city, and we do have many outlets for music. But I promise you, I've had the same experience that Mrs.
Heckinger.
Well, I think of you as Bubbles. And but I've had the same experience. I listen to it in utter fascination. I must say I enjoy music for teenagers, and I don't understand it. I don't understand the fascination of teenagers with death, for instance. Most of their songs concern themselves with a sudden and violent death of the beloved, who was 14 and a half years old and has stolen his father's car and rammed it into a wall. Isn't there a song sort of like
that?
Well,
that's one of a million. If you go back a little further, I think it was the day of the balladeers, the songs were more tragic. That's how your music and poetry started, your balladeer. I mean, if you read, and I'm sure you have, and remembered the minstrel that wandered through Sherwood Forest through Robin Hood, which is now a commercial selling point, not due to the teenagers, but we won't go into that either. But this guy sang about death and John Brown's baby being swallowed by a dragon. I mean, this is worse than the...
But you can talk about death in the words of Shakespeare or Shelley, or you can talk about death in the language of Tin Pan Alley. The poet makes death a noble and immense event. The Tin Pan Alley makes death an incident on which to base some frivolous little lament. So that the subject isn't important. It's the treatment of it. And I think the treatment of poetry in teenage music is abysmal.
It's not poetry. It's
well, all lyrics are poetry, whether they're blank verse or not.
Yeah. May we come back to this music part of it and stay on the more general part of it.
Just keep off comic strip.
Mr. Kapp, you issued a sweeping blast on the subject of teenagers, which you no doubt recall. Teenagers, you said, are repulsive to everybody except each other.
Yeah.
We put too much emphasis on them. We keep saying they have rights. Why should they have rights? In Europe, kids have no rights, but in America, things have been all switched around. Children used to try to please their parents. Now the parents try to please the children. This is the general sort of distaste you have for the whole thing.
Yes, well, you see, I've survived three teenagers of my own. I must say that I do deserve some sort of medal, and possibly they do, too. However, I didn't make the mistake that most fathers make of trying to associate with my children. My theory is that no 14-year-old boy wants a 45-year-old man as his companion. That I think teenagers should be ignored. And I must say for myself, I find it a pleasure.
Lucky. You see, in many of the so-called advice books for parents, it was very fashionable a while back to say, be a pal to your kids, talk to them, do everything with them. And the idea was that it was sort of undemocratic for a father to tell his children what to do. And several people like you have rebelled against it. In fact, one man said, well, my kids have lots of friends, but they've only got one father. And I think that this is the right approach to it. But many parents just don't have the self-confidence to do it. They're afraid their children won't like them. And so
I think teenagers should be fed, sheltered, and avoided. I think they should be given the car keys only at rare intervals and nothing ever discussed with them. The teens are a stage of lunacy that can be cured by only one way, and that is the teenager living to be 20 or 21.
Do you think
if
it's
he's permitted
to. Cured at that point?
I think
you know,
so. I think
40-year-old teenagers and their habits and their attitudes.
It's true, but the 40-year-old teenager has a mortgage on his house. He has teenagers of his own. He has all sorts of depressing facts in his life that that keep him rather sober. The teenager, however, has more money now than he's ever had. The psychiatrists and all sorts of governors of people's thinking have given us a sense of guilt about these kids.
Where does he get it?
Where does he get what?
The money.
Well, I know he earns it, probably. I have no argument against a teenager working in a gas station or...
You mean
he got it
from the parents?
The parents are as much at fault as the kids are. You can't blame the kids. Kids are... when they come into this world, they come in to grow up and to learn. I think parents are as much to blame as kids.
I think you're absolutely right about that. But when you ask where do the kids get the money today, a lot of them do work. A lot of them get allowances.
I think it's wonderful that
and,
they work.
But the difference, you see, is simply this, that, well, if children worked during the Depression, they had to contribute this money to the family kitty for food and clothing. Now when they work, all this is just uncommitted money. They can do with it whatever they want. And that's why they can buy 9 million copies of your record or anything else that they want. Buy. And while I think to some extent it's very nice we live in an affluent society that they can do this, on the other hand, I think they account for something like $10 billion worth of business in this country, and this is a very lucrative market. And advertisers have been exploiting this and just pitching direct advertising to
kids. It's our wonderful country we live in.
But do you think that kids, are, back to you, of 13 and 14 are really able to spend this kind of money and make so many decisions wisely?
Well, I'm going to refrain from getting too serious on this subject because, as I said before, I was not aware that this was going to be the topic. And I'm not going to get into it. I'll let you two come out with a decision on it. But I just feel that I have traveled throughout the world. I do agree with Mr. Kapp that the European way of living is much different than the American one. But this is the United States of America. This is whoever has willed it that this is the way our country should go. That's exactly how it is. It's a free country, freedom of speech, and you've got your advertisers taking advantage of everybody, and the American people, they want to be taken advantage of, and they go out and buy.
Well, I don't know that I can completely agree with
you. Excuse me, I want to understand one thing, Mrs. Hanker. What did you understand the subject to be, Mr. Hanker?
I was under the impression it was some kind of a panel with some kids.
Oh. Well, what do you think we are? I mean, it's just the lighting that makes us look old. I didn't think
we were going to take it so seriously that these teenagers, it was tyranny and it was...
Let me say something in defense of teenagers.
I am out of my teenage years. I'll tell you that for sure.
Oh, I think we are.
I have had... I'm not going to compare myself to the imagine... a typical American teenager, because I, first of all, I'm a Canadian, which is slightly different. And I'm just not going to get involved in this subject, because the kids have done a lot for me, and I refuse to bury them in the ground or let anybody else do it.
And what would you talk to the kids about, Mr. Anker?
Well,
I suppose there were three kids here instead of Mr. Kapp, Mrs. Heckinger, and myself. It would just be about music and songs.
Well,
and so
whatever
forth.
Subject was brought up, I try and discuss to the best of my ability.
You don't really take seriously, then.
No, I think there's too. I think that there's too much. The kids are sick and tired of adults hammering away at them, and they pass it off now. I mean, with the cars and the books, and they laugh it off, but they're not interested anymore.
Well, what do you think they are interested in? Let's
they want their own things. You let them grow up themselves.
I
mean, they need guidance, but you can't. They've heard all these stories time and time and again, and you go to somebody young and you start telling them not to do this and not to do that, and that's just exactly what they don't want. They'll do it.
What do you think they do want to do? This
well,
is something that
suppose I tell a teenager not to run me over in his sports car.
Well,
is that offensive
I've
to a teenager?
I've been run over by a 45-year-old woman. Let's talk about them. Everything's relative. You cannot...
However, let me say this, that I think we're talking of teenagers as though they were one huge criminal class, all
exactly.
Like each other, and it's simply not true.
Right.
I think there are all kinds of teenagers. I think there are the teenagers who make all the noise, the teenagers who are unbearable pests. But there are other teenagers, too, and I see them. My living is made largely from teenagers, too. And I am perfectly willing to criticize them.
Don't you think that as a group they exert an undue influence on our culture, of which you are a product, as an example of
this? What do you mean by product?
Well, if it weren't for teenagers, you wouldn't be a millionaire, for example. And your way of life
well,
wouldn't be written about it
in magazines.
I'm a
millionaire only due to... adult press agents who feel that I am, and it's absolutely wrong.
Why do you let them continue?
I think they have very good taste, then, if I'm an idol to the teenagers, because I don't feel myself as anything. I don't try and put anything over on them.
What about all this publicity about the kind of life you lead?
Well, that's due to your magazines right here, dear, and they're run by adults much older than us.
Why do you allow it?
I don't. I haven't done a date layout in years. Now, you want to talk about some other idol,
you can. But you did when you were getting started.
I didn't. I cannot stop in this free country someone running around taking my picture.
Well, we've got two things running around the table now. Let's talk about one of them at a time. Mr. Agger, you don't feel that this horrendous picture of what's going on among teenagers is accurate or fair, I take it. Now, just to mention the kind of things, the tremendous increase in accidents by teenagers, the tremendous increase in the rate of illegitimacy among them, the tremendous increase in the rate of drinking among them. This is the kind of thing that Mr. and Mrs. Hechinger wrote about. Now, is it that you simply don't want to discuss it, or you think it's all overdone?
I don't feel a part of it. I had nothing to do with all that birth and drinking and everything.
You don't want to discuss it?
I think there are two parts of blame. I blame the parents also. If they cannot control their kids, it is their fault.
And you don't
I was brought up very well. I was a teenager, of course, and I had a very good upbringing. I was born in an average little house, average little town. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm a self-made man. I made it myself. I'm proud of myself for doing it, and I have done no wrong, run anybody over or drink or smoke or illegitimate children, so I don't feel a part of this. I'm sorry. I think it's a certain cult that the rest of us are guilty by association.
No, I don't think it's quite that simple. No one, even yourself, would say that you were an average teenager.
I was.
When you were a teenager.
I was.
You were making very good money a few years ago when you weren't. But the point is that your way of living, this business of moving into a big, beautiful house and having all these spreads in the magazines and being written about in adult magazines where you say you may not like it, and you say, all right, you don't take it seriously, and perhaps there are a good many teenagers who don't take it seriously either. There are a good many teenagers with very fine, high goals in life, but there are many who do read it and look up someone and say, well, gee, he did it. Look at all this money he's making and all the cars he has, if not you, one of your co-idols, as I call them, who buy these beautiful homes. And there's no reason why they shouldn't buy them, but they haven't publicized like this and support their parents.
Well, that's your country, dear. It's not, you can't blame these
children.
I don't agree with Anchor.
If you have these magazines who are in business to print about these people, you can't blame a teenager for that. Give them something else to read. Why do you have a little Abner or a 17 magazine? You're not sending it for the... If you're dealing to kids, why are you saying that you're writing things for kids, and on the other hand, you want to give them something else?
I think there are plenty of other things to read.
But you realize that the kids today, there's always been... the kids have always controlled in their own markets as they did years and years ago.
Now, this is not true.
Well, now, this is the other
point. Well, then, today there is more so. Today, more so. I think it's the growing of the country, and the world's getting smaller, and who knows where we're going.
But I don't think that this is inevitable in the first place. I think it's happened. I think it's happened for a variety of reasons. But
I'd like to get Mr. Kapp's opinion on this, which is the other point, Mr. Anker, that we got into. I take it that the argument of people like Mrs. Hechinger is there's something new in America today. Mm-hmm. There's a teenage group which is setting tastes, setting standards, and setting them at the lowest level. And that this wasn't true before. And this is what you're really worried about, isn't it?
Yeah, the people will think it's the natural, normal thing and continue with it.
Well, let's change it. I'll change with it, you know.
I think that's largely true, but I think this is the noisy group. I've seen teenagers at school terribly involved in the sciences and in the arts and who enjoy Paul Anka and enjoy all these exuberant arts that the teenagers seem to respond to and that we don't. That are no different from the kind of stimuli we had when we were teenagers. They've taken another form, but they're essentially all the same. I do think that the nation is teeming with splendid teenage kids, but nobody ever hears about them.
Yes,
they don't peddle dope.
Exactly.
They don't riot in the streets. They're working and thinking.
This is one of our main points. We've sort of referred to them in the book as a government in exile. They don't get any support from the adults, which is they have kind of withdrawn their authority and behind it, and they don't get any support from the rest of the teenagers. Sure, there are kids that are doing all kinds of wonderful things, and as you say, you don't hear about them. Nobody talks about them.
And I do want to say another thing. May I defend Anken now?
I appreciate your effort. Well, I don't need any defense.
Well, may I explain that all this garbage publicity that keeps pouring out and being printed has as its victim the guy who is being publicized more than anyone else.
I think your references on where I've been publicized should be. I wish you'd clarify them a little. I don't frequent the fan magazines. I have nothing against them. I believe in the way that you do that I don't want to be seen with 10 different girls and 10 different issues. And that has not been the case with me. If at some premiere that I had to go to because of my business and position, I had a picture taken of me, I have no control over that. But talking about other idols and myself, I would appreciate being a little separated from them because I have achieved it myself, and anything that I have done wrong, I will blame myself for. But I'm a little different entity than the rest of them, and I want that brought on board before we
continue. Well, may I try to get onto the general point, which I think is in the minds of most people when they talk about this. They are concerned with a number of attitudes which they feel that teenagers have and which they feel are gradually taking over the whole society. And the one which seems to concern most people the most severely, and I take it from your book, also concerns you very much, is the new attitude toward sex, when you're supposed to get married, illegitimacy, et cetera, et cetera. Now, people always hammer on things such as the development of pre-teenage parties, where you play a modern version of the post office, and it consists of what's called 7 minutes of heaven or hell. And the pre-teenage boy takes the pre-teenage girl into a closet or some other room, and depending on his inclinations, kisses her, which is heaven, or hits her, which is hell, for 7 minutes. Then, like you, Mr. Anker, people wonder, how did they get that way? And they look at the kind of thing which is being read by teenagers and the kind of songs which teenagers are singing. And I do want to get back to that. Let's look at the kind of thing they read, though. I went and bought a copy of 17, which goes to 5 million teenagers. And I was amazed, really, at the incongruity between the text of it, which is very fine, and the ads, though. There are 6 or 7 full-page ads in here on getting married. This is for presumably for 17-year-olds. There are dozens of pages in here for Chanel, for example. When you put all your eggs in one basket, this is obviously the going steady theme. There are ads for Coty, a new collection of pure bright colors to let your lips emerge warm and inviting. Now, I take it you say this sort of thing is just the result of a free country and we shouldn't bother about it.
Well, who's doing this?
I say, you're not concerned with it, though.
Oddly enough, I know many teenagers, whatever age you want to bracket as a teenager, that laugh at half of these publicity articles and pictures and television commercials, which they look at and turn off. They're quite aware how stupid they are. But you can't blame the kids. Some idiot in some agency in town thinks this is what kids like, and they go out and spend all their money and try and whitewash these kids to go in to buy these things, and the kids don't want to have anything to do with it. I blame the adults again.
I think they must buy them or they wouldn't spend all that money on ads. But I do think, on the other hand, that the advertisers have recognized that a teenager isn't a neuter. A teenager, by the time he's 13 or 14, his sex urges are as strong as they will ever be. I think the peak sex urge is considered around 15 to 17. We've demanded in the past that the teenager not recognize the forces within him and to behave as though he were still 7 years old. These advertisers do recognize those forces, and I am not appalled by the pre-teenage parties. I think they're rather nice. I think it's a
you
good
think this
idea.
This one is nice, Mr.
Yes,
Mr.
I do. I think that's better than sneaking behind into a lot
but
someplace and go into doing the same sort of thing behind a bush. I think this is the sort of thing that makes it a recognized part of social living, and I think we might as well not be shocked at the fact that the teenagers are physically quite developed.
These are pre-teenagers.
Pre-teenagers are quite developed.
Well, I wish that I could agree with you, but I'm afraid
I didn't
can't.
Think you would.
I think, firstly, if you look at this in the big picture, the rates for unmarried pregnancy is rising steadily, and it's rising steadily, according to a Senate study, and supposedly the girls from nice families who live in the suburbs, the rise of venereal disease.
I think that's because we keep track of them now. I think there are probably just as many before.
I can't agree with you about that either. I think that really this age, when you start this kind of thing, so young, what is left?
How do you control it? Surgery would be one way, but then they grow up.
You just can't go to a child and say, you don't do this. And as he says, surgery.
I think that there are several things here.
I mean, that's a very...
In many cases, for example, parents feel that kids starting to go out at the age of 10 is very cute, and they encourage it. And parents throw parties, isn't it? For couples only at this age.
Blame
and they
parents.
Think it's... Well, you see, you can say blame the parents. Of course the parents have to take some of the blame, but that doesn't solve the problem. The schools, too, can do a lot by saying, oh, we're not going to have couples only dances for 12 and 13-year-olds.
I think the problem is that teenagers are divided into two groups, boys and girls, yes. And I don't know how you're going to cure that.
You can't cure
it. I think we might as well face it.
I don't think we can all just say, well, it's all the parents' fault, it's all the fault of the society, and throw up our hands and say, what are we going to do? I think we've got to be a little more constructive in looking at it.
But, I mean, even, you know, it's the same thing. You take a bunch of teenage kids, and you tell your little girl no, and the other 10 do it. It's a case of follow the leader.
Now, is it if the other 10 girls got pregnant and I had a daughter of 11 or 12 and they all got pregnant, I'd be darned if I was going to tell her to go ahead and do it. I think that just because we have a real kind of tyranny of numbers in addition to this, just because everybody's going out and doing something is no reason in the world to just go right ahead and do it. I think you've got to draw the line somewhere. I think you've got to be able to say, no, you're not a parent.
Let's tell them not to get pregnant.
Don't get pregnant, kids. Now let's see what
happens. Do anything, but don't get pregnant.
See, this has been one of the points we were talking before a little bit about all the advice in the columns, which is also it's given to teenagers. And, of course, the standard question that the 13- and 14-year-olds write in to people is, well, should I kiss him goodnight on the first date? And the standard answer is usually no, with a few loopholes enough so that in various cases. But the point is that girls get pregnant, and this is a very important thing for them to think about. And I don't think a girl of 13 is ready to cope with this kind of thing. God knows it's hard enough for a woman in her 20s. And while she may be physically mature, you know, there was Elizabeth Taylor's famous comment about having a child's mind in a woman's body. And I think this is really sums up the teenage girl's problem. But I think that we've got to give them a lot more help. I don't agree with you that we can ignore them. I think that mother's got to tell her, well, gee, they had troubles too.
Well, no,
there's no answer to this.
I think we must tell them not to get pregnant and not to take marijuana and hope that they won't. But we can't go around policing them. They're going to do as they choose. And if they want a neck at 12 or 13, I'd rather have them neck in their own homes and out behind the bar.
I agree with that. You know, even in every law-abiding community, you still need a policeman. Just because a certain number of people are going to break the laws anyway and break the rules anyway is no reason not to have the rules themselves. Because I think that there are a great number of people kind of in the middle who will listen and who will be given guidance. And just because they're not going to be completely followed or somebody's going to break a law or not follow a particular
law, I don't know
there's
about
no reason to throw the custom out.
May I interrupt to reintroduce you very quickly? Mr. Paul Anka here to my left, of course, the singer and songwriter. And just speaking, Mrs. Grace Hechinger, the co-author of Teenage Tyranny, and speaking even more recently, of course, Mr. Al Capp, the creator of Little Abner. I wonder if we could shift over here to try to talk about another phase of this that keeps coming up in these discussions, which is that somehow or another, the whole American culture has taught kids to grow up much too fast. That before you used to take time to grow up, and therefore you didn't get as much trouble. That's one of the ways to keep that girl from getting pregnant. This is what people keep saying. I don't know whether it's true or not. Now, Mr. Anka, when they get on that line, and you know it better than I do, they keep pointing to the kind of music which is sung to kids. And they love to point to your song, Diana, which according to my information, was written when you were 15, about an 18-year-old girl. Is that right?
Because you're so young and, I'm so young and you're so old.
This, my darling, I've been told. Or another one of your songs, I hope that I can sing for you 5 years from today when I'll be in my 20s with my hair turning gray. Now, people argue that this is urging, cajoling these kids, grow up too fast. You see, this is the kind of stuff that they keep throwing at singers like you. Now, would you care to comment on that?
Well, I think if we look back 30 years ago again at some of those songs, let's not go into it, but there were some pretty bad ones then. I think this is a very light... At 15, I'm glad I said I'm so young and you're so old. It shows I was an innocent little boy, and... Well, I'll just forget
it. I don't think you can trace a single pregnancy to that song.
Exactly.
I don't think so. Do you know, I'm terribly relieved that now delinquency is being blamed on Paul Anka. It used to be the fashion to blame it on Milton Caniff and myself because we did comic strips. I'm terribly glad you're the evil influence now and they've laid off us. I really think they may
blame it on both of you now.
Yeah.
You, and maybe I corrupted their father.
Are we really being blamed for this?
No, I don't think so.
They bring up this kind of
music. I think, Isaiah, if that
18-year-old girl got pregnant as a result of that, it was her own fault.
Exactly. Well, it might not have been an 18-year-old girl. You see all these problems, and you say, well, all right, suppose there was this kind of music or bad music written 20, 30 years ago. It doesn't mean, it doesn't excuse it for now. But you see, there's one other thing. All of these problems of getting married in high school and not getting married in high school and having children with venereal disease and all this. The children that we're talking about are younger and younger. But it used to be, the flaming youth used to be out of college, and then there was the college crowd, and now we're talking about high school.
I think it all
kids.
Started with whoever wrote, "I Can't Give You Anything But Love, Baby." I think that gets to the point a little quicker than "I'm so young and you're so old." I think that was before I was even born.
I'm afraid I don't even think you can take all the blame, as you say. I think you have to share it a little with the parents and the schools. I really do. I think that when people read these kind of ads and listen to you and see various other things and become enticed and aware of all this, and then they have nothing in their homes.
Have you heard any
of
my records?
Yes, I have.
Oh, I didn't Margaret Mead. Didn't Margaret Mead tell us about savages who had never heard a Paul Anka record and who made it when they were 12 and 13?
I don't think Paul Anka is...
But what I mean is that there are a lot of pregnancies out in those Stone Age islands, people living without the advantages of records or comic strips or books about teenage tyranny, and they behave... fairly luridly, too, without any of these influences. I really think the problem is that they're people.
We're not living in a Stone Age community. One of the problems is, of course, that youngsters may mature earlier biologically, but they still, in order to have a good life, have to learn a trade and hopefully can go to college. And there is this period when it is necessary to postpone. You don't have to, just because you have an urge, you don't have to gratify it the very minute you get it. I may be un-American of me to say that, but there is such a thing as being able to postpone one thing.
I quite agree.
They don't have to go out and gratify every urge they get, and it seems to me in many cases that's what we're saying to them.
Well, I think adults are apt to gratify dangerous urges, too. I think it's just part of the makeup of the human animal.
I think so, too.
Mr. Kapp, I'm curious about your position on this matter. How much of it is good humor, and how much of it
it's all bad humor, I assure you.
Is there, in your opinion, is there anything you say about this subject worth saying?
Yes, there is.
What would you say it is?
I would say that first, I think it's dead wrong to blame teenagers for being alive and developed at an age when we think they shouldn't be. They are, and we might as well face it that 14 and 15-year-old kids are quite developed, and they're also quite lunatic. And because they're fully developed biologically and underdeveloped mentally, they're going to get into trouble. And I don't think popular songs or popular literature has anything whatever to do with it. I think that's simply the way they're constructed. I do think this.
You think that we can't do anything about it?
Of course you can't do anything about it any more than we've always done. We've always tried to raise our kids to be as decent as they possibly could be, and they've gone out and been as indecent as they could felt they could get away with being. And that's the way it's always going to be and will be. Now, I do think, however, there's been one change, and this is the sudden solvency of the teenager. The teenager was apt to take his parents' guidance without thinking much of it, because if he didn't, then he didn't get his allowance. Well, teenagers can now earn money, and they're independent of their parents. They're financially independent. Their parents are making so much money that they're able to give them enough to live their own lives. We've written so much about teenagers, it's gone to their heads. They feel terribly important. These things have contributed to making the whole group pests, criminals, on one hand, and the hope of the future on the other, because there are just as many good ones.
Well, I'm glad you said that.
Before you jump in here, may I keep playing this straight now for a moment? Mr. Anka, if you were asked the serious question about whether you think there is at the present time some conscious exploitation of this new thing called the teenager, not particularly in your own field, but in general in the United States, that people are saying, look, here's a bunch that we can really snag. And would you say that's true, and would you say it's something new so far as you know?
Something that is being exploited?
Yeah, I mean, there's a conscious exploitation.
Well, I definitely think there is. There's no doubt about it. I think you'll find that if those who are pressuring that way and who are exploiting it to the kids, if they change their method, you'll find the kids will change. In my own little way, if it's to, as I get older, improve in my songs, and which is the method that I am doing now, and having them grow up with me, I think that advertisers should do the same thing. Kids aren't fooled by all this make your lips pinker and that. It's whoever's doing it is just as much to blame. But I don't think you can just stop it overnight like that. I think you got a job ahead of you.
I don't know that it should be stopped. If kids want their lips pinker, I don't know that that's a crime at all.
Well, I'm a little bit confused here. Excuse me. I'll then I'll be quiet. You say you do feel that there is this conscious exploitation in some fields, and that this is helping create an unhappy, a mixed-up teenager. But on the other hand, you don't take it very seriously.
It's because I'm closer to my teenage years, let's say,
than anybody else. Yeah.
And it's I don't see where kids have ever been any different. I mean, in the days of my parents and yourself, they had long bathing suits, and I read of old times when they were criticizing how they used to dress and tear up theaters and scream and yell. It's a cycle all over
You don't
again.
Take these statistics seriously at all.
Oh, I'm sure that they're very accurate, but I think maybe less people are more emotional than they used to be.
If I may say this, I have no confidence whatever in I think these statistics are entirely true. I think they're more appalling than the statistics of 50 years ago, because we didn't have statistics then.
Exactly.
If you want to
statistics.
Yes, we weren't as statistics insane as we are now.
Exactly.
Now every bowel movement of a teenager is recorded and charted. If you want to look at a picture of teenagers of the golden days, read Huckleberry Finn and find out how a teenager brought up in the old-fashioned way we revere committed crimes, was an enemy of society. It was the charming crimes, charming hostility towards society. But it's all through there. If you want to go further.
There was a big difference. He was still rebelling against society. He had something to rebel against. In other words, today the parents are saying, gee, everybody else is doing it. Well, if everyone else can stay out till 1 o'clock at night, so can you. Today the parents don't set standards and rules, and don't give the teenagers anything to rebel against, anything to cut their teeth on. They can go and have these parties, and the parents leave the house. We have friends who had a 14-year-old boy, and he'd been to so many parties that she felt she had to reciprocate, and two or three of the girls' mothers called up and said, are you going to be home? And she said, what do you mean? Of course I'm going to be home. And they said, well, we're very glad to hear that. Many parents were not home. And when you start doing this, you don't have any control. You're not telling them not to do anything. You're not giving them any support. I did want to get back. You mentioned something quite interesting. We were talking about they're all developed physically, and you might even say they're all developed socially, and they're underdeveloped mentally. And I think this is a very important point. I think even in our schools, that the great emphasis is on the social development and on the sports and the drum majorettes. You know, they even have scholarships now for drum majorettes. And this kind of thing, instead of emphasizing the world of real achievement, the things that kids can do. And I don't really think that you intend to throw up your hands and say, oh, there's nothing
I don't
intend
to throw up my hands.
There's a great deal that you can do about it.
I think it's pretty useless to tell teenagers not to be teenagers. This is what they've always been. If you want a picture of teenagers, read Booth Tarkington 17 when they were just as idiotic.
Yeah.
30 years ago, they were idiotic in different ways, but that's because times were different then.
But you see, we're not telling them not to be teenagers, and I don't think parents should. What parents should tell them is to try to grow up, and that they're not going to be teenagers for the rest of their lives, and to give them some adult goals to grow up to find out what they want to do with their lives, and to know that when they get to be 20, they're going to have to take some responsibility. They're going to get out of college. They're going to have to find a job, and what do they want to do? And this is teenage is not a way of life that will go on forever. I mean, kids of 10 now, all they look forward to is being teenagers. Not before you wanted to grow up. Now you want to be a teenager.
I think they still want to grow up. I disagree with you there. I think you'll still find a little girl getting into her mother's shoes and her dresses and wanting to drive cars. But
they can do all this, you see, when they're teenagers now. So they're looking...
They're teenagers at 11 and 12. They're much ahead of...
I'll tell you, as much lipstick, which is designed to drive 14-year-old boys mad, as much as that is that's sold, so many... model airplanes are sold, too, where kids, scientific toys, half your toys are scientific toys, where kids can do something that they're just as fascinated by as they are by being attractive. They're just as fascinated
but
by achievement.
Younger children. You see, one of the points, when you get back to this economic exploitation, it starts much younger than with teenagers. We have a 2-year-old boy, and when he listens to his television programs, they start saying, tell your mommy to go out and buy this kind of cereal or that kind of thing, or even particular kind of cough medicine, which I think is absolutely the worst. It doesn't just start with the teenagers.
Now, what should we do about
the parents?
That?
Have to be the ones to put their foot down.
You know, Mr. Hank keeps asking this question.
I don't understand. So, what do you do about that? To tell someone about cough medicine?
I think parents should do is just put their foot down and say, "No, we're not going to get this kind of. No, we're not going to do this just
don't
because
get it
is advertised on television." Yeah, exactly.
Call the station. Let's not have
this
commercials
so
and see where we
you.
Are.
Actually, this is like blaming Oliver Twist for being corrupted by Fagin. I don't think the teenager is to blame because he's being corrupted.
No one has said the teenager was to blame. We're talking about the society as a whole, and we're saying it.
Let's talk about the adults and the parents.
Exactly.
Let's forget about teenage tyranny. I think this is a little bit of a...
But we have said, you see, teenage tyranny, like all other tyrannies, is set up because enough people look the other way and don't care. Parents, I think, for a variety of reasons, have said, well, gee, we don't know what to tell our kids, so we won't tell them anything. We'll let them go along with what the group wants to do. And I think most tyrannies have started this way, political tyrannies as well, when enough people just weren't interested and didn't care, and so another group just moved in.
Why don't we start today and get all the parents who are supposed to teach their kids that let's try and change life a little bit here, and I think you'll find a big difference.
Oh,
what
sure.
would you? Of course, that is where you two end up agreeing. If I understand you,
yes,
that the real problem starts with the parents.
Well, she always insists that parents don't care and who's minding the. And I think the parents.
Well, she said then she wants to say that they should care.
They should.
I think we should talk to the parents. You can't take a bunch of kids and have them run the country. Let's get more books out on how teach adults how to look after their kids.
Well, we have a little.
That's it. We just have too much of a little. We should have more.
You know, we have even a little. The only other point that I wanted to make is that parents have to start young, saying, you know, when their children are young, saying, no, you may not do this, or just because you hear this on television.
The parents of today originated in the years when most of our teenagers today were only a thought. So it goes to show that in those days, life was a little rough for them, too.
Well, I think you're talking about a group of parents who are exploited by other parents. For instance, those who exploit the teenagers aren't teenagers. They're grown-ups. They exploit the teenagers. They corrupt the teenagers. This is a group of parents who corrupt the kids whom the other group of parents is supposed to uncorrupt. So I think teenage tyranny is a good title. I think it does exist. I think they've been made tyrants by one group of parents on one side in charge of all the ammunition of persuasion. I don't think any mother or father is half as seductive as a television commercial or an advertisement. I think it's a lost battle. So that if those adults who are corrupting our teenagers have control of all the mediums of corruption, then the parent in the home is absolutely helpless.
You're very fatalistic about this, because they are in control of them.
Of course they're in control. Well, then why not talk about something that does exist?
Don't watch television except this.
No one, you cannot help but watch television.
Well, before we drown in all this fatalism, I mean, there are a lot of people out there wondering, I suspect, what practical thing you three people might conceivably suggest to what? In a normal situation, you live in a nice suburb. You have a $35,000 a year house, and your kid's 10 or 11 years old. And it's a girl. It is a girl. And she comes to you and says, everybody's wearing lipstick, everybody's wearing formals, everybody has training bras, I want one. And you think this is really rushing things a lot. You think she's going to end up in trouble. What do you do? You say simply that you say no if you don't like it.
No, I don't think it's that simple. I think it's too much embedded in the kids today, and that's the way of life, and it's going to take a long time to change it if that's what you want to do.
I don't think it's going to be changed. I remember the time when I was horrified, when it was the greatest event of my 12th year, when I saw a woman with her lips painted and smoking. I was sure I'd seen a loose woman. She was some middle-aged hag of 22 or 3. We've changed now. Now any woman of 22 or 23 can smoke and wear lipstick, and we don't consider her a scarlet woman. Let's take another good look at our kids. Possibly, they're achieving a freedom which they should always have had, and we're not going to turn the clock back. And our statistics mustn't terrify us.
I just can't be so gloomy.
I'm not gloomy at all. I think it's a rather cheerful thing to say that there really isn't a problem.
You don't think there's a problem. You see, now here's where I can't.
People are making it a problem. I mean, how can
I don't think it's a problem about the lipstick and the smoking so much, although I know what I think is a problem. You just seem to think, well, all right, even if these statistics aren't exactly accurate, you just can't explain the whole thing away.
I know.
If I thought these kids were happy with all this, I mean, you hear about all their problems with sex for a 13-year-old, they shouldn't have to even think about sex.
They've always had those problems. They never had
the problems.
Ann Landers to write in. Of course they have.
Well,
but they exchange.
You know a lot of precocious kids in
here. Oh, I know. I don't know. I think New Haven, Connecticut had the average kid. And we discussed them in whispers.
Sure, yes.
We were concealed. Now the kids have a healthy, wholesome privilege to come out in the open with their problems, which have existed always in children.
They're living in the middle of it. You've got motion pictures today. They're... ridiculous. 12-year-old, I mean, just Lolita itself. I mean, the kids today, it's like breathing.
It's
except
the problem of anyone who wants to maintain any standards has a much tougher time of it.
We've gotten a confusion into this now as to, on the one hand, it's being said, all right, the situation isn't so bad. And on the other hand, it's being said, maybe it's bad, but you can't do anything about it. What are we really saying? I mean, take these infernal statistics here. 40% of all brides in the U.S. are teenagers today. This percentage steadily goes up year by year, according to the U.S. Population Reference Bureau. The number of divorces among teenagers is 18% higher than in any other group in the United States, and the percentage of divorces goes up year after year. Now, this is apparently a fact. Is it something that we can do anything about, or is it not bad?
I don't think you can do anything about it. You're going to make it illegal for them to marry in their teens? If you don't, either you make it illegal, you shoot them if they're married in their teens, or you face this 18% rise in divorces among them. Well, there's no answer to it. This is one of the facts of life.
Don't you think if they had a few more things to think about?
Teenagers don't think of anything, about anything except each other. And they always have,
when you were a teenager, you didn't think about anything but...
Philosophic, well-behaved teenager and an example to my entire generation, so there's no point in discussing me.
What about all these kids that do this volunteer work in hospitals and win science fellowships and...
Those are the kids
they don't have these problems. I mean, sure, they go to parties and they do things, but they're not obsessed with this. I just don't think you really...
I don't think the majority is obsessed with it.
I don't think they're any more obsessed now than they ever were.
Years ago, I'm sure that the world wasn't sex-conscious 40 years ago, or else we wouldn't be here. I'm sure they were. I don't think anybody took the trouble to go around and add up like they're doing today. I think the word teenager is a commercial thing today, and everybody's playing it up
today,
to the hilt.
When you talk about teenagers, and when you talk about college kids before, now it's these kids of 13 and 14. And my feeling is that they shouldn't be so obsessed with all these ideas about sex. They prove they can't handle it.
I don't think they ought to be either, but they are, aren't they?
Well, now, Mrs. Hackinger, you've run up against a stone wall here. Let me ask you, is there a stone wall out there? That is, do most parents adopt the attitude of Mr. Anka and Mr. Kapp?
I'm afraid that a good many of them do. Obviously, all of them do not.
Let me speak as a parent. I was horrified by these statistics, and I hoped my children wouldn't be parts of those statistics. And I did my very best, but I was never under any illusion that my counsel and advice had anything but a limited effect on them. And any parent who feels that he can lay down the law and say don't feel this way is an idiot.
What do you think did have the influence on, is having
the influence on?
Their own urges, their own in conflict with their own sense of decency, and you do your best to instill this in them and hope that the urge to be decent is stronger than the urge to be lurid.
Exactly.
You don't agree with Mrs. Hackinger at all that the whole society today is putting more of a pressure on those kids than it did 50 years ago.
Yes, I agree wholly, and that's because there's more money to be made out of the teenagers.
Exactly. It's a whole circle. I'm sure this trend is being started.
I don't think parents should give up trying. I think the fight between the parents and the pressures must go on. But I don't think we should be appalled by these statistics. I think that nothing is more misleading than statistics now as compared to statistics 50 years ago. It's like comparing the speed of a car now with the speed of a car 50 years ago. We're vastly better at statistics now than we were then. This doesn't mean that we've all become a nation of degenerates.
Mr. Anka, you wanted to comment.
We're just keeping score now. We never did before.
I agree with Mr. Kapp said. But it just goes back to the teenagers today are a very commercial subject, and I think if whoever is doing all this propaganda to the teenagers would change it a little, the teenagers will change with them, but no one's making any effort. You still have your magazines, you still got your same publicity in your television, and we're not going to change it, and it's going to continue, and you just have no control on it.
So you feel, too, with Mr. Kapp, just to make sure I understand you, that it's kind of a battle between the individual parent and all these instruments of mass communication.
There'll always be a battle in one way or another. I mean, a parent, I'm sure, is concerned about their children and do the best they can.
Let me give you the tyranny of adults over teenagers. For instance, our wars are fought by 18-year-old kids. We expect them to know the great issues for which they must give their lives. The teenage soldier is the symbol of our power. The teenage dancer in the musical comedy, the 17-year-old kid, is our great sex symbol. We expect these kids, who we use and exploit, to kill and to rouse our own passion, we expect them to be neuters. Well, they're not neuters. And we mustn't expect them to.
Just a few seconds. I think everybody's agreeing with you.
Yes, I think they are. I think that I agree that parents, in many cases, and commercial influences do exploit teenagers and shouldn't. But I think it is up to the individual parent to deal with his own or her own individual child to make them be the kind of person that they want them to be.
I agree.
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
On a very unexpected note of agreement, I'm afraid we are cut off. For this somewhat surprising program, may I thank you, Mr. Paul Anka, singer and songwriter, you, Mrs. Grace Hackinger, co-author of Teenage Tyranny, and you, Mr. Al Kapp, of course, creator of Little Abner.
And father
of three. Thank you for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, keep tuned for news of our forthcoming program.